Yep.
That's exciting, isn't it?
Indeed.
You may be seated. Good afternoon and welcome to the final case on our calendar, our sixth oral arguments here in Rochester in front of the Minnesota Court of Appeals on July 11th. Judge Werke is not participating in this case. Judge Jeannie Cochran will be listening to the arguments on tape and then conferring with us, so we have a reconstituted panel. As you probably both know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your argument. And then, counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Marshall, I forgot to ask you to officially call the first, call our next case.
File A18-1726, James Michael Edison v. Christine Michelle Edison.
Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready, and please introduce yourself when you come to the podium.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Keith Dyke. I represent Michael Edison, who is petitioning in this matter for grandparent visitation with his granddaughter, Jordan, who is currently 13 years old. Whenever a grandparent visitation matter comes to court, it's either because the visitation has been restricted or completely cut off because of some issue in the family. The task of the trial court isn't to determine the short-term best interest of the child, because obviously there's an issue that's impacting the short-term relationship, but rather whether that whether the long-term relationship of the child requires that the visit or that the visitations continue. The long-term focus for these kinds of matters is best probably expressed by the Minnesota Supreme Court in Welfare DL, which is cited in my brief. It's at 486 Northwest 2nd, 375, 1992. In that matter, DL was placed with foster parents at about 4 days old, and she resided with those foster parents until she was 2 years old. In the interim, DL's parents had their parental rights terminated, and both the foster parents and the maternal grandparents of DL petitioned to adopt her. So the issue before the court was which group got to adopt DL. The Supreme Court upheld the trial court saying that decided that the maternal grandparents should be the ones to adopt the child. Obviously, there was going to be some disruption in the relationship. DL had lived with her foster parents for 2 years, so there was going to be some pain there. The court said, we share the trial court's belief that the benefits of a close relationship with blood relatives is in DL's long-term best interest, justifying any temporary pain that this separation from her foster parents will bring. So clearly the court was looking at that there is an issue, there's an issue that's going to have to be dealt with, but we have to make a decision based on which one's going to go forward and do the adoption. I think similarly in this case, what we need to look at is what the long-term best interests of Jordan are, not necessarily what her short-term interests are. The trial court seemed to weigh the fact that Jordan testified in chambers, and she said pretty clearly that she did not want to have any relationship with her grandfather at that point. There was also evidence in her testimony that she had been basically enmeshed in the adult business involved in this case and maybe was just parroting her mother's wishes. But in any event, that's what I think the trial court fixated on and decided that, well, she doesn't want to have visitation, then we won't have visitation. Well, that's a short-term solution. I mean, what's the long-term effect on that girl's life?
Let me just make a couple of comments, and then I do have a question for you. First of all, I mean, this is a very sad case.
Yes.
And I, as a grandparent, a parent, appreciate the difficulty of these, all of these cases, but this case in particular. On the other hand, the argument I'm hearing you make is one that I know you made very effectively in front of the district court. Again, the arguing the long-term best interests, and you're certainly right, that's reflected in some Minnesota case law. But I'm not sure that it's a robust understanding of the best interest factors as they apply to this type of decision, because it is more complicated than just your view or the grandfather's view of the child's best interests. Mm-hmm. And the statute does give some fairly specific guidance that is the burden for a grandparent that does seek visitation, burden on that grandparent to prove that they will not interfere with the parent-child relationship. And when I read the district court's decision, I see several determinations made by the judge based on the evidence. And again, of course, you know our role as an appellate court. You know, we don't reweigh that evidence. We don't make credibility determinations. Some of those cut against the mother, and some of those cut against the grandfather. And as long as they're supported by the record, the district court explains the basis for its analysis, we're generally going to affirm. So in light of that standard of review, and you aren't seeking a new trial, I mean, you made that clear from the beginning of your brief, you understand that, you know, I'm not seeing a path to the relief that you're seeking, because our district court did find that the grandfather in this case, failed his burden to prove that he would not interfere with the parent-child relationship. Our district court also found that it was in the best interest of the child to deny visitation. And in specific, that reunification therapy was not in the best interests of the minor child. And again, there is evidence in the record to support those determinations.
Well, I guess I would differ a little bit on the interference factor. I think the interference factor isn't whether the grandfather is going to interfere in the relationship. I think what the interference factor looks at is whether the relationship between, or the visitation between the grandfather and the grandmother.
And that's what I meant to say. I think that's the way the statute reads, correct, is that the visitation would not interfere. And correct. I apologize if I misstated
that. No, that's
that.
Quite all right.
That's my understanding, too.
Yeah. What I'm arguing is, I'm not arguing that the judge didn't have his reasons for deciding the way he did. Mm-hmm. But I think his focus was wrong.
Okay.
He was looking at the short-term best interests of this child. So we've got a problem in the family. Obviously, the court doesn't have the time or the expertise to solve that problem, and so he slammed the door. I think that's the wrong thing to do. I think the statute makes very clear what the court should look at. 257 COA essentially has four subdivisions that I'll concern myself with, mm-hmm, that deal with different aspects or different people who are petitioning for visitation. Subdivision 1 deals with a situation where a parent is deceased. Mm-hmm. The statute says the court shall consider the amount of personal contact between the parents or grandparents of the deceased parent and the child prior to the application for visitation. So obviously what the legislature is saying is that the past contact, the length of that, the nature of that, the beneficial quality of that to the child is going to predict our future, I mean, to the extent we can predict the future. So the past is prologue, is basically what the legislature is saying. In subdivision 2, it deals with situations where there's been a dissolution action, custody action, legal separation, that kind of thing. It has essentially the same sentence. The court looks at the prior relationship or the prior contact. In subdivision 3, the one we're dealing with here, they state it a little bit differently, but it's basically the same point. They kind of make it a standing rule that a grandparent who has had a grandchild live with them for at least 12 months then can have standing to petition for visitation. Well, again, we're looking at the temporal aspect here of that relationship. How long was it? How good was it? And subdivision 4 deals with other people, not grandparents or great-grandparents, and they make more or less a standing requirement of 2 years that the grandchild has to live with the other person for 2 years. So all of this gets to the fact that we're looking at the past relationship to predict whether the future relationship is going to be in the long-term best interest of that child. In this case, the court found that Mike Eidson essentially co-parented Jordan for 10 years of her life. She's 13 now. The last 3 years have been basically in litigation. every witness that testified at the evidentiary hearing, including witnesses for the mother, said that that relationship for those 10 years was in the best interest of Jordan. So it stands to reason to me anyway, when I look at this statute, that raises a presumption that it's in the long-term best interest of Jordan to continue that relationship. But obviously we have an issue. We've got to deal with something. Something happened in the family. There was a lot of testimony at the evidentiary hearing about reunification therapy. It's not a guarantee that it's going to fix the problem. It might not. I think that this relationship and the length of it and the beneficial effect of it deserves a chance. That's what I'm arguing for.
Yeah, and I understand, counsel, your argument. It is well stated in your brief. You obviously took time with it. But again, I have to compare your arguments to what I see the district court did. And the district court does make a specific determination recognizing the length of the relationship between the child and the grandfather, even saying that even though petitioner was a stable figure in the minor's life when she was a young child and supportive of her financially and emotionally, at the present time, petitioner's desire for visitation would not be in the best interest of Jordan. But the court didn't stop there. That's the present time reference that I think you effectively make both today as well as in your brief. The court goes on to say, and I'm just reading from the conclusions of law and on the addendum, pages 9 and 10, it is better for the minor child not to have a relationship with the petitioner grandfather than to deal with petitioner's unequal treatment that would occur in the future. Again, based on the entire context of the relationship and of all the evidence that the district court heard. Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm not arguing that the trial court, after the evidentiary hearing, would just enter an order saying, okay, there'll be visitation. That's not what I'm arguing. I think that he had good reason to believe, Judge Butel had good reason to believe, that there was obviously an issue in this family and we couldn't go forward the way things were. But that doesn't mean, pardon the expression, you throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a relationship that's meaningful, significant to Jordan, to the grandfather. The courts should look at what can we do about it. And what we can do is reunification therapy. And again, that may not result in visitation. The therapist might decide, okay, it's going to continue in the future. We can't do anything about it. It's not in their best interest. That's what we recommend. On the other hand, they may get in there, resolve the issue. And in my experience, just in my cases, when I see grandparent visitation matters, a lot of times the objection of the parent that has the child really isn't the real objection. They're masking what's really going on in the family by using something else as an excuse. It could be a control issue, it could be whatever. But they might seem petty in saying what really they think the issue is, so they make it into something bigger. I'm not saying that happened here. I'm just saying that it can happen. And essentially what I'm arguing for is a remand to the district court to send this case to reunification therapy to see if people who have the time and who have the skill, essentially mediators that are trained in dealing with the emotional and psychological aspects of this kind of case, see if they can do something about it. I think it's worth it. Basically, at common law, there was no grandparent visitation right. There wasn't anything there. It was basically a property concept where they said the kid belongs to the parent. So the parent gets to choose their relationships and associations and that kind of thing. 40 years ago or so, states started passing these grandparent visitation laws because they recognized that the parent-child relationship isn't the only significant relationship in a child's life. There's grandparents, great-grandparents, other people. So they started passing these laws to enshrine in our jurisprudence the fact that this relationship matters. I think that the legislatures would look at this and say, we can do better than just slamming the door in a relationship that had lasted that long. So, in essence, what I'm saying is that Judge Butel, he made his decision, but he made his decision through the wrong lens, essentially. He was looking short term. Can I order visitation right now? And obviously that he couldn't.
Well, are you going to address his specific finding that reunification counseling or minimal contact in the forms of cards, letters, and phone calls between petitioner and the minor child is not in the best interests of the child?
Well, the testimony at trial was from the reunification therapist that they start with the parent and the grandparent, and the child isn't involved at that point. They try to determine what the issue is first, and then they try to go forward. And in a therapeutic setting, when they think it's ready or necessary or required, they bring the child in, if you get to that point. I guess what I'm saying is that I don't know if the judge really understood the fact that the child, this isn't something you're putting on the child, some kind of burden you're putting on the child. The child isn't even involved at the beginning. It's more of a burden on the parents. And in grandparent visitation things, obviously one party has all the control, the parent of the child. He or she can just say, no, you're not going to see that child. If the grandparent then approaches that parent and says, would you go to therapy or would you try to, you know, resolve this issue? They're going to say no. They've already made their decision. We need the jurisdiction of the court to make the push that's going to make this relationship work. And I don't think Judge Beutel was looking at that. I think he was looking at, she told me she didn't want to see him, so that's it. And I don't think that's enough. That's all I have.
Thank you. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you want to use it. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Beth Serrell. I'm the attorney for Christine Edson, the mother in this case. Parents have a fundamental, constitutionally protected right to raise their children. The only parent in this matter is my client. Appellant wants to fashion himself as a de facto parent, but he's not. He's a grandparent. This focus on reunification therapy highlights the importance and the constitutional right that a parent has to parent their child. If a parent is suffering from parental alienation or those sorts of things, or has been incarcerated or inpatient treatment, those sorts of things, and needs to reunify with their child, they have a constitutional right to raise their child. Reunification therapy can be a wonderful thing for a parent. The reunification therapist that testified at trial had never met this child. She testified that generally reunification therapy is something. It can be very beneficial, but in this case, it's not helpful. It's not something that the court should force on my client. She's made the decision that it's not in her child's best interest.
But that wasn't the district court's analysis. The district court didn't just rely on the fact that the mother did not want reunification.
Correct.
And I think that the statute required more than that.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because we do have a grandparent who has standing to make this claim and make this request. You did not challenge on appeal the district court's determination. So
that's correct,
if you move to the statutory analysis, I'd appreciate it.
Correct, yes. So parents are entitled to a presumption that they're acting in their child's best interests and that their decisions can only be interfered with for grave and weighty reasons. The right to raise your child includes determining with whom your children spend time. An appellant, my client's father, seeks to strip my client of that right. He wants to force contact with his granddaughter against the wishes of both my client and the minor child. A parent's right to decide with whom their children spend time is only taken away in very specific circumstances that protect the parent's constitutional rights. To disregard my client's decision regarding whether an appellant can see my client's child, he must prove three elements by clear and convincing evidence. As the court noted, the court did find that he had jurisdiction because of residence of at least a year. We disagree. We didn't appeal that issue, so it's not before the court today. The trial court found that he did not meet his burden with regard to the other two elements. The trial court's decision is sound and should not be disturbed. My client is respectfully requesting that the court affirm the trial court's well-reasoned decision. With regard to the best interest factors, appellant has proposed a unique framework for analyzing what's in the child's best interests. It's creative, but it's not the law, and the trial court's failure to follow it is by no means an error. The court made multiple sound findings that support its conclusion that visitation is not in the minor child's best interests. The trial court interviewed the minor child. She was adamant that she did not want any contact with appellant. She consistently told her parents, her therapist, her school social worker, and the court that she did not want contact with appellant. She was 12 years old at the time of the trial. She's bright, she's articulate, she's brave. Appellant wants to focus on how she came to feel the way that she does, arguing that my client unduly influenced her. And that argument is flawed for two reasons. First, it's just not true. My client didn't unduly influence the minor child. She came to her mom.
There are specific findings, though, by the district court with regard to the minor child's influence, being influenced by the mother, and some details in the evidentiary record in terms of how the child learned certain information. Prior to her testimony. So, again, as I stated with counsel for appellant, I mean, we are a reviewing court, mm-hmm. right? We're not making this decision in the first instance. And the argument I hear you making today is probably very similar to, and was very effective, worked in the district court, But, you know, in this court, we're going to look at whether the district court correctly applied the law and whether there is evidence in the record to support the findings of fact that then supported those conclusions of law, especially in light of the lack of a motion for a new trial.
Yes.
So in light of that, I guess, you know, the argument I hear the appellant raising that goes to did the district court apply the law correctly is about the sort of scope of best interest analysis, that it's not limited to the present time and to the child's best interest in the present time. And we do have some findings by the district court that are limited to the present time.
Yes.
So are they sufficient? The district court's findings that are with reference to the present time, are they sufficient to deny the petition?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe, obviously, that they are sufficient. Again, this is my client's constitutional right to raise her child. And so I understand.
We're beyond that, though, aren't we?
We are.
Because we have a petition by a grandparent who has standing. So yeah. Although you're right, our case law suggests we're going to still give special weight to the parent's concerns in this scenario, and in particular, whether visitation would interfere with the parent-child relationship. We still have to check the district court's analysis to make sure that it's a correct application of Minnesota law.
Correct, Your Honor. And my position is that appellant is trying to shift the burden. It was his burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence that visitation would be in the child's best interest. He didn't.
Definitely. What about the district court's application of the law?
I think the district court's application is correct. It did look at the history. It did acknowledge that there was a history there. But ultimately, in order to determine that visitation should be ordered, in order to get to that step, and reunification therapy would be visitation. I understand the process that it's a therapeutic relationship, but it's forcing a child to do something against her mother's will and against the child's will. And so the court considered the background, the court considered the history, and said it is not in the child's best interest. I think it would be contrary to the statute if the court were to say it's not in the child's best interest now, it may be in the future. They've failed their burden at that point. If they can't prove that it is in her best interest right now, and they can't, they failed that burden. With regard to the interference factor, our position is that they also failed their burden there. We also have the position that they waived that argument. They didn't mention it in their brief. Case law is very clear that if you don't brief an issue, you've waived it. And so our position is even if the court were to take the position that it should disregard the district court's decisions with regard to best interests, their case still fails because if they've waived the argument with regard to interference, then they can't prevail because it's, again, their burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence every element of their claim.
I think if I understand the appellant's position on that based on the reply brief, it's that the issue in this case, sometimes those are very unique issues. In this case, in light of the facts and the district court's analysis of the child's best interest, the two issues of interference and best interest are actually intertwined. And they do certainly make arguments in their opening brief with regard to the district court's analysis of whether visitation would interfere in the parent-child relationship.
Yes, Your Honor, and I agree that those issues are intertwined, but they are separate elements. And so if he cannot prove by clear and convincing evidence that the visitation would not interfere with my client's relationship, then he has failed. And so he can prove it on best interest, but if he can't prove it on the interference issue, then he fails. I feel as though throughout this case they've tried to flip that burden and tried to put it on us to prove that it would interfere. We have very clear case law. That's unconstitutional. You can't do that. That's not my client's burden. It's his burden to prove it. Our position is that he didn't do it. He didn't even really try. The evidence that was presented at trial is mean. It is awful statements about my client. It is saying that she loves her son more than she loves her daughter, that she engages in emotional blackmail, uses it to get what she wants. His witnesses, some of whom had never met my client, had these very negative views of her. One called her, said that she tarnishes healthy relationships. Another called her desperate and jealous. So those facts, in looking at the full evidence that was presented to the trial court, his visitation is absolutely going to interfere with my client's relationship with her child. And not only that, but he has to prove that it wouldn't. We don't have to prove that it would. The other issue is he asked the minor child to lie to her mom. He obtained medical insurance without my client's consent or without her knowledge. So he does things that actively interfere with my client's relationship. Finally, the other issue is this child came to her mom and is asking for protection. This started because she came and said, I don't feel comfortable. Protect me. He's asking the court to strip her of her right to do that. And when a child says to their mom, protect me, and the court tells her she can't, that in and of itself would be interference with the relationship.
I find it harder to understand your interference with relationship argument that you just put forward when I think about what I see as a pretty limited relief that appellant's asking for here, reunification therapy, which would start with your client and with the parties, not with the child. So how is, and if it doesn't go further, and if, tell me if I'm reading the record wrong and what it says about reunification therapy, then you don't get to reunification with the child. So how is that proposal, which I think is all they're asking for us to remand, to reverse and remand for that consideration, how is that interfering with a parent-child relationship?
Sure. And the issue, Your Honor, is that right now, the court has to look at the circumstances right now as presented at trial. Right now, contact is not in the child's best interest, and so he has not met his burden to allow the court to overcome my client's constitutionally protected rights to raise her child. And she is saying this is not in her best interest. I don't want to do this. The trial court agreed.
But you were just saying that you first looked at best interest, then you separately look at interference. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. I would say if you separately look at interference, how is the remedy that appellant's proposing here interfering with your client's relationship with the child?
I think it goes back to the court's analysis of the history, and what really seemed to bother the district court was the unequal treatment of the children. And the court had a specific finding that that would continue. And so the court, after hearing the testimony, made a determination that there would be interference in the future if he allowed any sort of contact. And so I feel like the trial court addressed that by saying that the history, you know, appellant wants to focus on the history. The history is that this is an issue that was simmering for years and that was detrimental to this family. It was destructive to this family, and that that would continue. And it comes back to, again, being able to usurp my client's ability to say how to raise her child. And she has that protection. And the protection is the clear and convincing evidence standard of all three elements. And he did not prove that it wouldn't interfere. And that's his burden. It's not mine to prove that it would. It was his burden to prove that it would not interfere. And I don't think he met that burden. So in conclusion, respondent respectfully requests that this court affirm the trial court's well-reasoned decision. He failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that visitation is in the child's best interests. He also failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that visitation would not interfere with the minor child's relationship with their mom. Our position is that he's waived that argument, which would be fatal to his appeal, but even if the court does not agree that he's waived the argument, he hasn't proven that the findings are in error. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes. I guess just a couple of points. There's a fairly constant argument here about the constitutional rights of the parents. I don't think that takes into account the legislative changes that have been made in the grandparent visitation statute, and those are constitutional. They were written to be constitutional based on the United States Supreme Court case that said these statutes have to have certain factors. So we're dealing with a situation where obviously the legislature has given grandparents the right to do this. We're not trampling on anybody else's constitutional rights.
With the right to file the petition.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And the legislature obviously has said that we can have visitation as well, and that doesn't unconstitutionally...
Well, there's a right to visitation upon
correct.
A certain showing
sure.
and a satisfying of
sure.
those elements.
Okay. Yep.
If you would, during your rebuttal, could you address the waiver argument?
Sure. As I said in my reply brief, essentially the trial court cited the same reason for both findings with regard to best interests and for interference. He cited the fact that there was unequal treatment of the children. So to me, it's not which one we're dealing with in the statute, if it's interference or best interest. What we're dealing with is how do we deal with that unequal treatment or whatever issue there is in the family. That's the issue here. And it impacts both of those statutory criteria the same. If you resolve that, you resolve both. So I don't think there's any waiver, and as I tried to say in my reply brief, that's why I primarily use the term best interest, because interference is a factor in the best interest analysis, so we're talking about the same thing. With regard to what the trial court did. And the error that I'm trying to suggest here is, as I argued before, the trial court was looking at a specific slice of time that he determined that this was not in the best interest of the child right now to go forward with visitation. And it's his order has plenty of references in there at the present time or presently or at this point in time or words to that effect to indicate that that's what he was looking at. And this kind of plays into the burden of proof argument that Ms. Sarah was making. The statute clearly says that the petitioner has the burden of proof to prove best interest and no interference. I don't dispute that. But how do you prove that something in the future is going to happen or not happen? That's why I'm suggesting that what you're supposed to look at, what a trial court should look at, is the prior relationship. You then make a prediction that relationship then foreshadows what the future is going to bring, to the best of our knowledge, but we have this issue, so we've got to deal with that. You can't prove it's going to be in the best interest when you would have to prove that issue is going to be resolved. Well, that issue involves the mother, the child, the grandfather. You can't prove that until you go to therapy and find out, is there a common ground? Is there a way to do this? So what my point is about the trial court's order is that you don't look at the present time. You look at the bigger picture. And that's what I think he failed to do, and his findings do not support his conclusion because they didn't look at the long-term best interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This matter has been well briefed and well argued. We'll take it under advisement, and an opinion will be issued within 90 days. That is the end of our calendar for today. The court is in recess.
Thank you.